Good morning, everyone. All right. We are going to be in Psalm 139 this morning. Psalm 139, the 139th Psalm. As you open there, we are going to be looking at a song this morning. Music plays an important role in many of our lives, doesn't it? I myself personally am constantly listening to music. Doing my normal morning routine at the church back in San Bernardino. Headphones go in right away. When I'm in the truck, I'm listening to music. If I'm at my desk working on different things, I've got music going. And it's just extremely important. Of course, when you live an epic life like mine, you've got to have a soundtrack, right? To keep everything, you know, hot and ready. But music plays a very important role in our lives. Many of us, probably most of us, if not all of us, probably have a song or maybe some songs that can stir up emotions, that can take you right back to where you were when you first heard that song, or maybe who you were with. Maybe it was a wedding song. Some songs might take you all the way back to that dreaded junior high skating party, and maybe who you were with and what you were doing at the time. Maybe it was something that, maybe it's a negative thing, and you were going through a difficult time, struggling through something, and you remember some music or a song, and it stirs up some raw, hard emotions. Maybe it's not always a good thing. But there are songs and music and things that impact us. The enemy, Satan, will use music, but so will God. God had a musician here. His name's David. He was a musician, a singer, songwriter, which is just so popular these days. Singer, songwriter, David. And he penned, of course, lots of psalms, but this Psalm 139 is one of my favorites. It's one of the crown jewels. And in this psalm, what he does, as so many other songs have done for us over the years, is what he's doing is he's teaching us some very important things using this song. Now, that's not an odd thing at all. Many of you, probably, again, all of you, learned your ABCs by singing the what song? The ABC song. There were lots of things that maybe you learned through music, through song. Well, David is using this psalm to do just that. And what he's doing is he's teaching us or showing us, revealing to us some attributes of God. There are four stanzas in this psalm. Four stanzas, six verses each is how he organized it. And each stanza, so there's four stanzas, six verses each. Each stanza reveals something to us about God. In the very first stanza, we're going to find out that God is omniscient. Then we'll find out that he is omnipresent, then omnipotent, and then omnirighteous. And so we'll look at each of those as we go through. But we pick it up in the first six verses, and we find out that God is omniscient. Now, somebody help me out. What does it mean to be omniscient? God is omniscient. All-knowing, very good. I'm sorry, I know a couple of you said it a little bit earlier, but I couldn't hear you through the roar of the crowd. Omniscient is all-knowing. So we find out here that God is all-knowing. Now listen, for some of us in here this morning, this psalm, I mean, this is it. You're going to think that I read your diary before I came to teach this, because you're going to be thinking, this psalm is speaking right to me, right where I'm at, exactly what I need to hear. Others, perhaps, are not going to be so excited, because knowing that God is all-knowing may upset you. You may have some things that you don't want God to know. No choice. First six verses, we see his omniscience. Now, you'll note here in verse 1 that it was to the choir master. So David is presenting this psalm, giving it to the choir master. Now, if he's giving it to the choir master, what does that mean? This song was meant to be what? Yes, in a group. It was meant to be sung in a group, a choir, by a choir, choir master, okay? Obviously, here David is the psalmist or the author, a psalm of David. He begins by addressing this to O Lord. That name Lord is YHWH. Many of you know what that is. We put vowels in there so that we can pronounce it, because you were not able to pronounce that the way that it was originally spelled. So we put vowels in there so that we can say Yahweh or Yahweh or even Jehovah, it could be translated. And it means the existing one, the existing one. He says, O Lord, or O existing one, you have searched me and known me. That is to say that God had searched him, and when it says that he knew him, means that he knew every detail, every good and every grimy detail about David's life, and David knew that. David knew that. David had sinned with Bathsheba, you'll remember. And there were only a few people that knew about it, but when Nathan the prophet showed up and said, "Thou art the man," David was stunned. He didn't know that God knew about it. God was very well aware of it. He says, "You have searched me and known me." Now here's the fascinating thing. Here's the fascinating thing. Here's what floors me from the very beginning. Is that in verse 1, David proclaims, "God, existing one, Yahweh, Jehovah, you have searched me and you have known me." And then there's actually a verse 2. And here's my point. My point is this, that God knew him, and yet God loved him anyways. Isn't that incredible news this morning? Sometimes we get into the mindset that we deserve things and we're entitled to things and people just need to do it, or they better do it or else, and this is what is coming to me. But God knows us best. Now, I would dare say that if you knew me, now none of us really know each other very well at all. I may know a few people in here, but really none of us know each other. If you knew what was going on in my mind at times, or in my heart, or words that come off of my tongue, thoughts that I have, actions, things that I do, you may not be here this morning. You might decide that, hey, you come in and see Chris appear, and it's time to go. I don't have anything to hear from that guy. But vice versa, if I knew your heart and your mind and your thoughts and your actions, I might say, it's a waste of time. Why even go? God knows us intimately. God knows us intimately. He searches us and knows us, and yet there's a verse 2. Yet you and I live another day. God has mercy on us, loves us anyways. It says in verse 2, here we see in his omniscience that God is concerned with my public and private life. God is concerned with my public and private life. Verse 2, you know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it all together. You know when I'm sitting down. That is to say, you know when I'm sitting down and contemplating, considering some issue, some life question, some problem, some difficulty, some decision that I need to make that perhaps is going to be life-changing. God knows it. He knows when I'm sitting down, and he knows when I rise up to deal with that situation. Notice that he's not just watching us. Now, hopefully you picked up on that in verse 2. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. So he's observing us. He's concerned about us, observing everything that we do. If I'm sitting down, if I'm rising up, whatever it is I'm doing, God is observing that. But notice that he doesn't just observe. He's not just a bystander, but he takes action. In verse 2, you discern my thoughts from afar. There is God taking action in the situation. Whatever it is, church, that you're struggling or dealing with this morning, maybe it's not a huge struggle. Maybe it's not a life-changing decision. But maybe you just need to come to some decisions and you need to move in a certain direction and you're not really sure which way to go. I want you to know this morning, not because of what I say, but because of what we're reading here, that God knows you intimately. He has searched you. He knows you. He knows that you've been sitting down, going mad, driving yourself crazy, considering this time in your life. He knows that you have stood up, to make that decision and to move forward. And it says here in verse 2 that he discerns your thoughts from afar. That's him taking action. He's analyzing your thoughts from afar. He discerns them. He can tell what's right and what's wrong. And so he's looking into your life, peering into your life, observing your life. How many of you have kids? How many of you have kids? Aren't kids cool? Kids are cool. They're a blessing. We're not sure to who, but they are a blessing. I have four kids that really aren't kids anymore. My youngest is now a sophomore in high school. But, you know, there have been times over the last 20-plus years when I just sat, whatever they were involved in, you know, sports things, soccer or whatever, or just outside playing in the backyard or whatever, when there were times, oftentimes, when I would just sit or stand and just watch them for a few minutes. Just watch them. Just wanted to see what they were doing, what they were laughing about. Sometimes even when they were arguing or fighting with each other, I'd just stand and watch from afar. Because they were little kids and they were so cute. That's the picture here. That's what David understands about God. Man, you're watching me. God, you're watching me when I'm sitting down, when I'm standing up. You know my thoughts. You discern my thoughts from afar. I mean, again, those of us that are parents, you know, there's times when you see your kids coming and you know exactly what they're going to ask. You've already discerned their thoughts from afar. Oh, I already see it. Here he comes. He's going to ask for the car keys. I see it. Here she comes. She's going to come and ask for a few bucks. And you discern those thoughts. That's God. He says in verse 3, you search out my path. You know, God, and which way I'm headed. And you're already searching out that path and preparing that way for me. You search out my path, and in verse 3, and my lying down, and you are acquainted with all of my ways. He doesn't leave one of those ways out. You're acquainted with all of my ways, the good, the bad, the ugly. God is acquainted with all of those. He knows you intimately this morning, church. He knows you. He knows what you're struggling with. He knows where you're headed. He knows what you're seeking to do, what you're considering, what you're thinking about. In verse 4, even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it all together. And if I had the ability to add something in there, I would say, and God, thank you so much for stopping half the dumb things I want to say. It would amaze you, the things that go through my mind. Even in this situation, sometimes I'll be teaching, I'm up in front of everybody and these thoughts, and it almost comes out. And then I thank God for his mercy that it didn't. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, there it is again, the existing one, Jehovah, Yahweh, you know it all together. Don't miss the words here. You're acquainted with all my ways. You know it all together. It's complete. His concern for my public and my private life is complete. David had secrets that God knew. He understood that he couldn't hide anything from God. In verse 5, we see, he says this, you hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. Now, I don't know much about hemming. My wife does the hemming in the family. Occasionally, I get myself in trouble because I try and attach a button back onto some piece of clothing. And it normally lasts about halfway through the first time me wearing it. And it's hanging off or it's already fallen off and I've got it in my pocket. And then my wife will say, hey, you know, why didn't you tell me? Well, you know, I tried to sew it back on myself, but I didn't know what, you know, I just make a bunch of loops in there. You know how it is, guys? We don't know how to sew. So you just put a bunch of loops in there and you try and knot it up at the end and hope that it doesn't come off. And it might be a little bit crooked or whatever, but who cares? We're manly men and we don't care. But God knows all about hemming. He knows all about sewing. Notice here in verse 5, you hem me in. You're sewing me in. And he goes on to say, you're sewing me in before, I'm sorry, rather, from behind, verse 5, behind and before. What does that mean? It means that he's hemmed in from the back. In other words, God's got his back covered. But what wonderful news this morning to find out that, wait a minute, not only am I hemmed in before, he says, but you've got me covered, or rather after or behind, but also before. You've got me covered from all sides. I'm hemmed in. And then you know how we are, right? We say, okay, God, you've got me covered, but do you have everything covered? And that's why he goes on to say this in verse 5. You hem me in behind, before, and then you lay your hand upon me. God's got you covered from every single angle. There isn't anything that you're doing, that you're involved with, that you're considering, that God is not aware of, well aware of it, intimately aware of it, and involved in it. He's got you covered, church. Those of you that are living scared lives, you're worried about what God wants you to do. Listen, rest this morning. God's got you covered. Whatever he's calling you to do, he's equipping you to do that. And he's got you covered. He goes on in verse 6 to say, such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. You see, we take a break here. I mean, we're only part of the way through this psalm, and we take a break. That's what David's doing here. We take a break and we look back at this. What have we learned so far? We've learned that God is all-knowing, that he cares and is concerned about all of the intimate details of my life. He watches me. He's constantly keeping an eye over me. He's hemmed me in. He knows when I'm sitting down. He knows when I'm standing up. He knows in which direction I'm going to go before I even get there. He knows what words are forming in my puny little brain and are about to make their way to my tongue. He's intimately involved. And here's what David is saying there in verse 6. David is saying, look, even if I had three legs, I couldn't stand it. This is too wonderful. It's too high for me. I cannot even attain it. David's writing about it, and yet at the same time saying, you know, I'm writing these things down. I've discovered these things about God, but I don't really understand them all. I'd be willing to bet that David didn't understand how he ever got past verse 1. Remember that? You search me and you know me. And David's probably going through this and considering, his heart is being stirred up as he considers all that God is, who God is, that he's all-knowing. And yet, he loves him still. And David says, I cannot attain to it. I can't even wrap my brain around it. We move on to the next section, verses 7 through 12. We find out, David reveals to us through this, that God is omnipresent. Somebody help me out. What does omnipresent mean? There you guys are. You're awake, omnipresent. God is everywhere, all at once. Now, if you're having a hard time understanding, how could God be all-knowing? How could he be everywhere all at once? Join the club. I don't really understand it either. But he is, because we read it in the scriptures and we know it. Last year, I went to the Philippines with some of you. I don't know, is there anybody here that went to the Philippines that we went together? Okay, good. Nobody went to the Philippines. We were, one of the days we got in some boats and we headed up a river. Some of you, I don't know if there was a video, pictures or anything. Anyways, so we headed up the river. And then you get to this, they know where they're going, of course, and we get to this stairway that's pretty much almost goes right down into the water. In fact, it did go down into the water. And so you get out of the boat and you get the supplies and you climb up this staircase. It's a very steep staircase right up the side of a hill. And then you start hiking back through the jungle. Whenever we're on hikes and things, I tend to hang out in the back. It's not because I'm old and tired. But we were there, and a couple of people had to stop. They just couldn't go any further. And Pastor Cisco was there. You guys know Pastor Cisco, right? He's pretty cool, huh? Yeah. Yeah, oh, you guys are, that's so cute. Yeah. And Cisco, obviously, was one of the leaders there, and so he stopped with a few people that needed to stop. And I stopped also, and one of them was from our group, from our church, and so we stopped. And well, it was decided, Cisco said, you know what, we're not going to go anymore. The rest of the group continued on, and he said, I'm going to take these few back to the boats. Just, it's a rough hike, and, you know, they're not going to make it. And so what do I do? What do I do? I said, okay, well, I want to still hike to the village. So how do I get there? Now, I don't know if you're tracking with me or not. I've never been to the Philippines before. I don't know this jungle. You know, it's not like, oh, yeah, I know this jungle like the back of my hand. You know, I don't. I don't know the jungle. In fact, I've never been in a jungle before in my life until that moment. And he says, oh, you know, how do I get there? And he says, well, there's actually stones that will lead you all the way back there. And it was like, and you know what I did? I just said, oh, okay. I'll see you guys later. And I head up the path, and I mean, it was stifling. It was hot. It's the Philippines. It's hot already. But then you're in the middle of a jungle. You can imagine. It's just hot. I mean, I say it's hard to breathe. It wasn't really hard to breathe, but I mean, it was stifling. It was hot. And I didn't get very far. You know, they started back down the hill. I'm heading back into the jungle, and I didn't get very far before I realized what you're thinking right now. What in the world are you doing in the middle of the jungle? And here's the deal. I'm thinking, all of a sudden, a few thoughts start to run through your mind. I'm thinking, Cisco knows the way, but Cisco's going the opposite way with a group. The rest of the group is already up ahead. They may be at the village already. So the only person that knows that I'm hiking into the jungle by myself is Cisco and the few people that were with him, but they're headed in the opposite direction. And the rest of the group is at the village, and they don't know I'm coming. And you you stop, and you're in the middle of a jungle, you know, and you stop to take your selfie or whatever. And then you realize, and then, you know, in my mind I start thinking, are there snakes in the Philippines? Are there tigers? Are there, you know, what's out here? I have no idea. I have no idea. And I'm following some rocks on the ground. And I made it. I made it. I made it to the village. Walked into the village. Yeah, isn't that cool? You know, you get into the village, and you know, the rest of the team is there, and they kind of look at you like, oh, you know, I didn't, you know, you're just barely getting here. But they weren't really, you know, they didn't even notice I was gone. But, I mean, but, you know, you get into the village, but, you know, the thought strikes you that, man, God's actually in the Philippines. God is actually even in the jungle in the Philippines. Isn't that cool? That it doesn't matter where you go. Then notice the questions that David asks here in verse 7. He says, where shall I go from your spirit? Now, David didn't really want to escape God's spirit, but he's asking these questions. He says, where shall I go from your spirit? Or where shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. We say, well, that makes sense. If David were to ascend to heaven, he would find God there. That's where God's at. And then he makes the point of saying, or in verse 8, if I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I go to the underworld, the place of the dead, you're going to be there also. Verse 9, if I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea. You see, David is going to extremes here. If I take the wings and I fly away from you and go to the furthest part of the ocean, in verse 10, even there your hand shall lead me and your right hand shall hold me. What if I'm in the jungle in the Philippines? God's hand will be there to direct me. What if I'm involved, I'm faced with a life-changing situation? God's hand is there to direct me. What if I'm facing a problem with my spouse? God's hand is there to direct me. What if I'm facing an issue with a coworker? God's hand is there to direct me. What if I am facing a difficulty with my children? God's hand is there to direct me. And David is astounded by this, like you and I are this morning. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me in verse 11, and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as the day, for darkness is as light with you. David understood what it was like to have that dark cloud over his life. Some of you in here this morning, I don't know you. I don't know you. But I know that there are some of you in here this morning that have a dark cloud over your life. You're saved. You're born again. You belong to the Lord. And you know that. But you know that dark cloud very well. You know that darkness. You know that black dog in the room that follows you around. One psychologist, Dr. Laura Honos, said this: the annual costs associated with major depression in the United States are an estimated between $44 and $55 billion that Americans spend struggling with depression. She went on to say it is expected that depression will become the second leading cause of disability worldwide in the next decade and the most costly of all illnesses, she says. We got problems. Things, contrary to popular belief, you know, outside of here, contrary to popular belief, I mean, according to that, it doesn't sound to me like we're evolving into something better. Things are getting worse, and they're getting worse fast, aren't they? David understood what it was like to feel alone, to be abandoned, to be chastised, to struggle with feeling like, man, there's no hope. He understood that. And here's what David, here's what the scriptures have to say in verse 11. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you, existing one. The night is bright as the day, for darkness is as light with you. Whatever it is that you are struggling with this morning, if it's depression, whatever it might be, you take that to the existing one. And you say, God, this darkness is going to swallow me up. It's choking the life out of me. And you take it to the one who, as David says here, the darkness is not dark to him. The night is as bright as the day. The darkness is as light with him. God can heal you and wants to heal you and to set you free. Whatever it is that you might be struggling through right now. Let's move on to our next section, verses 13 through 18. Omnipotent. Somebody help me out. Omnipotent. All what? Powerful. There it is. All powerful. God is all powerful. He says in verse 13, we find out that we've been created. For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. Now, if I were to tell you, I've got a phone up here that's keeping time, and we've got, are you kidding me? Whew. If I were to tell you that that phone or my iPad or the phone in your pocket was a result of a plastic and metal and glass factory exploding, and that they, all those three exploded and they spontaneously created your device, would you believe that? Not for a second. This phone has been designed In fact, it says it on it that it was designed in California. Hecho in China, but it was designed in California. Somebody designed it. Somebody's puny little brain went into designing this thing. See, it's telling me it's time to go. Somebody designed it, and then somebody put it together. And our bodies, what David is proclaiming right now, is that our bodies are way more intricate than this. Much more complicated, much more wonderful. In fact, he says in verse 13, "For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together." Again, I don't know how to knit. I'm tough. Okay? "I praise you, for I am fearfully," that means awe-inspiring, "and wonderfully made." Wonderfully is the word palah, P-A-L-A-H, palah, and it means distinct. He says, "I was made in an awe-inspiring way." The human body is awe-inspiring. The way that the eyeball filters light and sees an image, turns it upside down, flips it around, and in all in an instant. The way that your limbs can work with your mind and how the body all works together. He says, "I was my body is awe-inspiring and distinct. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them. The days that were formed for me." Take heart this morning. God has formed days for you. He's designed today for you. Now, I figure if he designed the day for me, then I probably ought to every morning when I wake up say, "God, you designed a day for me, and I want all of it, every bit of it. I don't want to go in some other way and follow my own day. I want your day, the day that you designed for me." Verse 16, or rather, verse 15, intricately woven in the depths of the earth, "Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them." Verse 17, "How precious to me are your thoughts, O God." That word God, or the name God, there is L-E-L, and it means the mighty one. "How vast is the sum of them." If you were to add them all together, David says, they're countless. I can't keep track of all the thoughts that you have about me. And in fact, in verse 18, he gives us a comparison. "If I would count them, they are more than the sand." Now, when I say sand, what do you think? Beach. When I say sand, you think beach. But you'll notice that David didn't make a distinction. He just said sand, period. Doesn't matter how much sand there is on the earth, David said, if I were to count every grain of sand, he says, they would be more than the sand. "I awake and I am still with you." What did David say in another song? He says, "I lay down, I slept, I awoke, for the Lord sustained me." I didn't have to lay down and, you know, wake up every few minutes and tell my heart to beat, 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 beat. Keep beating in there. I'll be awake in a few hours. I didn't have to do that. God sustained him. Verses 19 through 24, let's finish up here. We find out that God is omni-righteous. Omni-righteous, meaning what, church? Oh, man, that was weak. Omni-righteous means that he's what? All righteous. All this crew over here, they're awake. Omni-righteous, he's all righteous, he's completely righteous, always righteous. Now this passage is going to shake you up. It's going to shake you up. Notice verse 19. "Oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. O men of blood, depart from me. They speak against you with malicious intent. Your enemies take your name in vain." He says, "Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with complete hatred. I count them my enemies." Now, what in the world just happened? This was going so well. And we were talking about how much God is in love with us. And we were being caught up in that and saying, "I can't even attain. I can't even handle all of this." What just happened? Well, before you pick up stones to stone David or me, let me say this. I'm going to give an explanation of this, at least what I believe it is. David is saying, penning what many of us have thought. Now, I don't want you to raise your hands, but there are many of us in here who have thought these same things. God, why don't you just wipe them out and set us free from these people? From this, I mean, it could be any group of people, any group of sinful people, sin us. Maybe it's a political group. Yikes, right? The election's coming up. Maybe it's a specific candidate. Why, God, why can't you just? And we've thought the same thing that David just wrote down. The difference is that David is honest. Now, is it correct? Well, obviously, that's not the right attitude. We take the entirety of Scripture, and we understand that God loves even sinners, doesn't he? I mean, we wouldn't be here if he didn't. And we understand that we are, what did Jesus say, that we're to love our enemies. Do good to those who hate you. So we understand that. But let's understand David's heart before we move past this. Why would David write this? Because David, as God is revealing himself to David, and David is writing it down, penning it, and he's considering all that God is revealing to him and who God is and how good God is. He also remembers these people. As he says, they speak against you with malicious intent. In verse 20, your enemies take your name in vain. And see, David is so jealous for the things of God and so passionate about God that he thinks what we often think and he says what we don't normally say. He says, God, you are so loving and so good, and these people are so hateful and so nasty. Why don't you just wipe them out? And David was a warrior. He knew how to kill. He killed animals. He killed Goliath. He killed other people. I mean, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands. David had a problem. He just got rid of the problem. And so he sees this as a problem for God. He says, man, these people are speaking bad against you, God. Why don't you just go wipe them out? Now, he doesn't want to do it. He understands that God would do a much better job of it. But that's what's going on here, is that David is passionate for the things of God. Now, as we finish, what do we want to do here? Is that what we want to do? Let's go out of here and let's just slay some sinners. No. No, there's good news. There was good news this morning. And here's where we get into the practical. These last two verses, I'm going to give you a couple of practical points. What should I do in light of all that I've heard this morning? For some of you, God has spoken to your heart over the last several minutes. He knows you intimately. He knows you this morning. He knows what you're involved in, what you're doing, who you're with, who you've been wasting time on. He knows it all. Give it up. Give it up. In verse 23, he tells us what to do here. Verses 23 and part of 24, he says, search me, O God. That's L-E-L. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any grievous way in me. In other words, the first thing that you and I want to do this morning is to say, God, examine me. Every area of my life, examine me. Know me intimately. You already created me in my mother's womb. You're already watching me when I sit down, lay down, when I stand up, when I walk, the things that I think, the things that I want to say. You already know all of those things about me. Search me, know me. And here's the next thing. So I want to submit myself to his examination, number one. And number two, verse 24 at the very end there, and lead me in the way everlasting. And so what's the second thing I want to do this morning is I want to submit myself to the leading of God. Allow him to direct you. And for some of you, that might be extremely difficult. It might mean the breaking off of a relationship that you ought not be involved in. It might involve trusting him wholeheartedly instead of the medication that maybe you're going too far with. It may mean going back to work tomorrow morning and telling the truth, even if it leads to the loss of your job. See, David didn't want to be anywhere else. What did he say in Psalm 23 at the very end? He said, "And I will dwell in the house of the Lord for how long?" He just didn't want to be anywhere else. Do you find yourself there this morning? If so, it may be calling for some drastic moves. Search me, O God, know my heart, try me and my thoughts, everything that I'm struggling with, dealing with, the decisions that I'm making, people that I'm involved with, know every single bit of it, every nook and cranny of my heart and my mind, God, know it all, and then lead me and see if there's any grievous way in me. If there's anything that grieves you, remove it and lead me in the way everlasting. I want to submit myself to God for examination and submit myself to him for leading. Let's pray.